Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Fu Boon Ping, the Managing Editor of the Asian Banker. I'm pleased to welcome you to this afternoon's teleconsultation on why cross-selling through a digital platform is now the new normal. And for callers from outside of Asia, a good afternoon to you too. Today's topic is one that has occupied a lot of mindshare lately, and that's on the impact of digitalization on banks and consumers. And we're going to look at leveraging the opportunities that this new platform offers banks to deepen engagement and relationship with their customers. And more importantly, the question to ask is how they can monetize this opportunity and make them into profitable programs. We have an interesting panel assembled today, comprising our head of research, Mr. Mubashir Zain Kasmi, who will share our research and what we've been tracking of the banks in this evolution towards greater digitization and how it is transforming their business model and helping them to engage their customers. A lot of the insights that we'll be drawing on will be from the Excellence in Retail Financial Services program that the Asian Banker has been running for the past 14 years. We also have Mr. Gerald Ferguson, General Manager for Asia at RF Intelligence Group, which, like the Asian Banker, is a global strategic intelligence and media company that focuses exclusively on financial services. While the Asian Banker focuses our primary research on financial institutions or the supply side of the business, RF Intelligence Group specializes in data and information gathering from the consumer side of the business and provide the industry customer-based insight and business decision support. RF Intelligence has just completed a global study on cross-selling, and Gerald will be giving us a glimpse into the key learnings from this study. This is the first time that the Asian Banker and RF Intelligence are working together, and we are very excited about how this collaboration can benefit our industry clients by pulling together the respective strengths of our two companies, and also pulling insights from the two perspectives that we bring to the industry, from a trade industry perspective as well as from the users of financial services perspective. Now, between Mubashir and Gerald, we'll be looking at the trends in digitalization and the retail banking business in general. And more specifically, we are also exploring initiatives to widen digital and mobile engagement that will create a more multi-channel, omni-channel experience for customers. These are not just about helping banks to improve user experience and operational efficiency, but as I mentioned earlier, it is about answering the question on how they can help banks increase their customer wallet share and what could be done to monetize the digital platform and improve cross-sell ability. As retail banks around the world face challenges to their profitability from fierce competition, tighter regulation, as well as from increasingly disintermediation and disruption for digital players, higher cross-sell and digital engagement will help improve their bottom line. We will discuss the following issues during this session. The effect that higher digital engagement will have on cross-sell and profitability, what are the top banks doing in terms of digital engagement and cross-sell, and how can institutions drive higher cross-sell by capturing main bank relationship in the customer life cycle. We want to make this an interactive session, and we want to encourage our audience and executives who have called in to participate by asking questions. Now, if you have dialed into this session, you'll be looking at the WebEx screen. On the left portion of the screen, you will see event-related information. You cannot hear the audio properly. You can also call in and listen to the session to your desk phone or your speaker phone. Now, on the right side of the WebEx screen is where you'll find the message boxes where you can send us questions. So for this session, we encourage callers to send in their questions. You can address them to the panel or to the host of the session. Now, so without further delay, let me invite Mobasha, Head of Research at the Asian Banker, to present our findings on the competitive trends in retail banking and cross-sell. Mobasha.
Okay. Thank you, Boonping. I'll begin with just a quick background, you know, of the Asian Banker. And as you know, we started out as a research publication focused on providing strategic business intelligence for decision makers. And over the years, we've collated a very rich depository of data, and we've begun to benchmark the performance of, you know, the various banks, and we're attempting to construct models and frameworks to assess the banks in terms of best practices, infrastructure, and operations. How you're able to respond to those threats and opportunities that may not be visible right now, but may only be apparent a few years down the road. So in that sense, we're looking beyond Asia and monitoring and benchmarking globally, as well as trying to apply or at least reflect local needs and conditions in emerging markets in the region. Based on our research, we find that an increasing proportion of IT projects today are aimed at improving customer experience. So this is not surprising as banks begin to realize that real differentiation in the marketplace is driven by their own customers, how the customers behave and what they expect to prefer. Many of their needs today are increasingly being met by non-bank players. So in the face of this new competition, regulation, and customer expectations that are driving banks to adopt a different and more customer-centric business model. Now, if you look at what has become evident is that technology innovation is the key to improving customer experience, and that will allow banks to engage and retain customers. So this is one of the important considerations we're having in today's conversation. I'd like to speak about our International Excellence in Retail Financial Services program first, which is the most rigorous, prestigious, and transparent awards program for consumer banking in Asia Pacific, Central Asia, the Middle East, and Africa. We evaluate a total of 252 banks in 42 countries in a thorough evaluation process. And since 2002, the program has been built on the premise that an outstanding institution in consumer banking demonstrates a long-term sustainable franchise based on strong business processes that lead to a consistent and profitable performance. It also recognizes financial institutions for their vision, execution, and market-leading propositions that can make a real impact to the bank and its consumers. We will not only grow the coverage of new countries in the program, but we will also monitor global best practices more closely through the introduction of an international category for the product and special awards. And I would also like to mention that we are taking an audit approach for our Excellence in Retail Financial Services Awards. There are 10 dimensions that I'll just quickly run through that are used as part of our assessment, which includes perception of the bank among its peers in the marketplace, the outstanding annual performance of the retail banking unit, sustainability over a long period of time and across economic cycles, the transparency and accountability of the business model, having very clear ethical and guidelines stating how business is done with the customer, a very clear sales and execution skills at the product level, rigorous risk management capabilities, superior business and operational processes and technology, strong penetration and efficiency of distribution channels, and finally, the focus on developing human resources both qualitatively and quantitatively. Retail banks in the APAC region today are struggling with sustainability and financial performance, which makes the case for digitization even more compelling. There's been a demonstrable increase in net interest margin for which we often penalize banks for their underperformance. Banks are still building their fee income, so we've seen that some banks are far more advanced than others. Although fee income is based mainly on transactional fees, fee income rather than from advisory and services, we're also seeing that cost-to-income ratios increasing across the region as increased regulation and compliance contribute to those costs. In 2015, we received around 195 submissions, and based on those submissions, we're seeing a resurgence in brand building today as branches are being rebuilt or re-engineered to suit customer requirements of the modern digital age. Mobile banking has clearly become a priority for retail banks in the region, which is driving those cross-sell opportunities as we see the eclipse of social media. We've also seen a lot of submissions around branch innovation and integrating the branch experience with a wider lifestyle experience, as well as a greater shift towards the wealth segment, which has to do with increased urbanization, income, and improved demographics in the regions that we're assessing today. Now, if we look at a more region-specific breakdown, we continue to see that mobile banking remains the area of focus, which is reinforcing the wallet share potential this emerging channel has. So irrespective if it's a Standard Bank or a Qatar National Bank or a DBS, banks across these three regions are undertaking their own digital journeys at an institutional level. So today, it is customers that are managing this relationship with a bank through their respective device ownership, whereas previously this was not the case. So banks today are now responsible as to how the customer wants to be interacted with, what can be sold, and through which channels. So here's how we view the competition between banks as we map the evolution in retail banking. The question is really of how to reach that holy grail of being so relationship-focused where matching the customer, channel, and product is a completely seamless interaction. As you can see, different banks are in different stages of this journey. Bank of East Asia, for example, doesn't compete on price, but rather seeks better customer information, channel, and product merging to design specific programs and products so customers don't leave them. For that, they will require consistent data on customers. OCBC remains a mid-sized bank that manages to retain customers without having to engage or fight in price wars. Whereas Metro Bank in the UK has successfully competed not on price but on customer centricity. So if we look at this slide, which assesses banks across the APAC and including Africa as well, in terms of how they're able to generate healthy cross-sell ratios. As shown in the chart, banks in the region are working towards selling their customers multiple products. But every bank has its own logic of how many relationships it would like to have with its customers. Of course, the more relationships the bank has, with a customer, it's tantamount to having a better wallet share. So when you're establishing these cross-selling strategies, banks must remember that the goal is in improving the bottom line. But they should also be careful in exploiting the situation and see that the bottom line along with the top line, and it's not just simply a matter of cross-selling products. Now, we stack them up as well with the international benchmark, Wells Fargo, which has the highest cross-sell ratio and is consistently scored above 6. And here, you can see that they're leveraging off their vast data and analytics capability. And the same goes with BBVA in Spain. Clearly, data and analytics is the tool that can enable banks to have that level of customer insight, or rather the 360-degree view that they need to offer their customers a more unique and customized product set. So what you want to see is a bank being able to meet their customers' expectations through their various product services and offerings or through their suite of products. As we mentioned, there has been a greater use of mobile and internet banking. The emphasis on branch banking has been reduced. But when it comes to the physical distribution, we're seeing greater digitization through branches. And this is being done whether it's through the use of electronic forms, through notice boards, tablets, and video conferencing, as well as through straight-through processing at the front office. We're also seeing the rise of non-bank players. In China, for example, we have the likes of Alibaba, Sina, and Tencent providing wealth management products, whereas in Australia we see greater peer-to-peer lending. Having that level of automation through digitization has resulted in reduced distribution and operation costs. And local banks are also scaling up their retail banking businesses and are now in a better position to compete on price and increase their exposure in their local markets. I would like to say also that there are many reasons why different banks have invested in digital banking. For some, of course, it's to acquire new customers or to reduce costs, while for others it is about leveraging on the potential cross-sell or upsell opportunities. What is important is that people in the industry have acknowledged that digital technology is here to stay. So whether you make money from it now or whether you use it as a money-making machine a few years down the road, digital forms the heart of banking strategies today and underpins everything that banks fundamentally do. Finally, I would like to just say a few words on bankquality.com, which is a part and supports the Excellence in Financial Retail Services Awards program. It's a rating site powered by the Asian Banker where customers can rate and comment on their banking experiences. And the results of this customer feedback component complement our own internal assessment of the bank. We aim to make it the premier site for rating and commenting on financial service providers, and its objective is to facilitate the process of bridging the gaps between your institution and your customers. We will take into consideration customer comments when we're building, as we're building our consumer component of the Excellence in Retail Financial Services. It is a work in progress, but we're expanding and evolving every day, and we're able to extract useful consumer data for our analysis. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mobasha, for that presentation. Just a few questions on what you presented. In terms of financial performance, it's one of the key criteria that we look at for the excellence program. And right. One of our main things is the cross-sell ratio. How do you see the cross-sell ratio? Why is it such an important matrix to banks?
Right. Well, to answer that question, Boonping, we know that, you know, with banks which are offering more than one product, you know, they, to promote this to their customers, they're using, of course, it as a cost-effective way for growing their businesses and enhancing the customer lifetime value. So this is done by, of course, by encouraging multiple product holdings by any individual customers. But when you cross-sell, you're offering the customer a product. And it can be as simple as, you know, promoting a credit card and internet banking to a savings or current account customer. What this does is that it encourages clients to use additional services. And so that impacts the top line growth and then helps the bank achieve its strategic objective. And the other thing is I think that, you know, customers appreciate being told about these additional products that might better meet their needs. And I think this demonstrates that the bank is aware of what the customer's requirements are within their, you know, the life cycle, financial life cycle, and the fact that the bank cares about their satisfaction and overall banking experience. And to me, this means, at least translates for the bank, that it will be a longer term and more engaged customer experience.
Yeah. Okay, and at the Asian Bank, how do we define cross-sell ratio? Almost every bank that you talk to today,
right,
they may have a different view of that. So,
yes.
Well, you elaborate.
Thank you, Bunfei. Well, we're measuring cross-sell on a product per customer basis, and the Asian Banker methodology defines average cross-sell ratio as the number of products per individual in the mass and wealth segment, excluding private banking. And product groups are, of course, counted as one product. So cross-sell at the moment does not include ATM cards and services, such as online or mobile, unless stated otherwise. Now, for example, the average household in the United States, which has about 16 products, mortgages, checking accounts, credit cards, 401ks, IRAs, et cetera, when we talk about Wells Fargo, for example, they're competing them, you know, with Bank of America or Citigroup and other financial institutions to own as much of their wallet as possible. So the more services you sell to individuals, the more profitable, the banks are, and the harder it is for customers to break away from their primary bank that they engage with. So, yeah.
Okay, thanks, Mobasha. Okay, before we get into our final discussion, we have another presentation. And we're really looking forward to this presentation from IF Intelligence, from Gerald, the global study that they've done on cross-selling. Gerald, you're on the line?
I'm here, Wu-Ping. How are you?
Okay. Good. Just before I let you share the learnings that we're so much looking forward to, just a question on the title of today's topic, why cross-selling through a digital platform is the new normal. How do you see cross-selling today? Obviously, digitalization is in its early days. What insights can we see in terms of how that's impacting on how customers deal with banks or even non-traditional players?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, and obviously very timely. Firstly, good afternoon, everybody, and thanks to the Asian Banker for having me along. We do a lot of work in the banking space and the financial services space, and obviously digital banking is a conversation that you have with just about everyone you speak to, and I think the move to digital from consumers is only going to speed up over time, particularly across Asia and some of the African markets where they're skipping form factors in terms of how they're engaging with their banks. If you think about consumers, they're fairly brand agnostic. They use their smartphones and their tablets for everything that they do in everyday lives. They're shopping on there, they're making payments to their friends, they're booking taxis, they're taking an Uber, they're booking Airbnb. All of these experiences are done digitally now, so the expectation of a bank to be in that product mix and have a smooth, seamless functionality that works through a digital platform is ever growing. And I think what that also brings is the fact that consumers now have a much greater ability to engage and transact with a larger number of banks. So it's about putting the banking product into the consumer's hand, but it's also giving them choice. So what we see is consumers tend to stick with one main bank over time, but what they'll also do is have several other product relationships outside of that main bank relationship. So there's a lessening of that consolidation of share of wallet, which is a real issue for the banks across the market. And you talked about new players coming in through from the fintech scenario.
Yep.
That's only going to disintermediate the banks even further, particularly in the payments space. And you look at what the fintechs are focusing on, they focus very much on niche markets and niche products. They don't go in as a whole banking relationship. They go after lending or they go after the payment space. And they go where they see an opportunity to make the customer experience better.
Okay. So if I may just summarize what you mentioned, you just said, less entrenched relationship, more kind of a fragmented relationship across product suite.
Correct.
Well, would I be correct to say that?
Yeah, that's fair to say. I think it's not, as you say, it's in its early stages. It's in its infancy, but as we know, it's something that moves very, very quickly in terms of the functionality and the spread of usage is something that moves very quickly in this day and age. So definitely something to keep your eye on.
Okay. I'll let you present your research or findings now. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll just flick over to my slides here, and I'll give you a quick bit of background about who we are and what the study we conducted was, and then we'll jump into some very specific global insights. I have down the bottom there Hong Kong market insights, but I won't be going into those today. But obviously, as you'll see, we cover a lot of countries in these, and there's market-specific deep dives into each of these countries that we can provide for you as well if there's interest. Just in terms of who we are, RFI Group, we're a global intelligence and digital media provider. We only do work in the financial services industry, so we specialise and focus exclusively on financial services. As you can see there, we cover about 34 global markets. We speak to, over the course of a year, we speak to something like 350,000 consumers on an annual basis, and around about 25,000 corporates as well. And we speak to them specifically about their banking relationships. Within 24 of those markets that you see there, we run syndicated banking programs, which allows banks to track and measure their performance in terms of things like customer engagement, satisfaction, recommendation, and you can also benchmark yourselves against your peers within that market as well. In terms of the actual study that we undertook, as I said, we spend a lot of time working and talking with banks, and one of the advantages that we have is through our work, we go to, you know, very different types of banking markets. So we spend a lot of time in the developing world. We spend a lot of time in the established banking markets of Australia, the UK, Singapore, Hong Kong. So within this study, we covered 21 global markets. We spoke to over 40,000 consumers, so 2,000 consumers in each of those markets you see listed there. And what we wanted to understand was we actually run this this report 2 years ago, and we were looking very specifically at loyalty and cross-sell. And what we wanted to understand now was what the impact of digitization is going to have on that, and particularly around switching. So we wanted to get a sense of you know, how is switching changing, and how is engagement with banks changing, and how do the models that the banks are currently coming up with respond to that. I'll start with a few sort of key points. I think none of these are very surprising to you all that work in banking, but it's always nice to sort of dial back and confirm these things. When we talk about main bank, in the majority of cases, the first product that people take out with their bank is a transactional account. And to own that sort of main bank relationship, the bank really has to engage customers through that and make it their hub. And that word hub becomes really, really important when you think about how customers are using that transactional account, what they're using it for, and how they think of it, most importantly. The reasons why main bank is important, again, I think is known to all of us. You know, there's a 90% correlation that if you can get that primary transaction account, you can get a salary credited into it, then they're going to consider you to be their main bank. And what that leads to is to have you in the consideration set, and you'll always be, if not the first bank they come to for a new product or a new service, you'll definitely be in the top three. We also know that, you know, main bank customers are generally more satisfied. They tend to hold a higher share of wallet. They tend to hold more products with their main bank. So the benefits of driving that main bank relationship are absolutely key. From an ongoing perspective, what we wanted to do, I said, was understand how we maximise that main bank relationship. So what we did was, across each of these markets, 21 markets, we asked the consumer to define what they, or to tell us what they defined as a main bank and how they defined it. So we understand how many banking relationships they have in the market and then which one of those they consider to be their main bank. And in 20 of the markets, 20 out of the 21 markets, the top reason, or one of the top reasons that they mentioned, was it was the bank that they transact with most often. And what's really interesting is when we did this study 2 years ago, that was still one of the number one reasons, but it certainly wasn't the most used reason. But what is also interesting is that if you look at the established markets, the number fifth or the number five reason there, I use this bank to pay my bills, is actually usually one of the first ones. So what we're seeing here is, particularly in some of the emerging markets, the way customers think about a transactional banking account is absolutely changing. So fundamentally and traditionally, they used to think about their transactional account as, this is where my salary comes into, this is where I pay my bills out of, and this is where I do my budgeting. That is changing now. The transactional account is about how do I conduct and how do I go about my everyday life and what is the functionality that allows me to do that. And the banking relationship is now about on-the-go banking. It's about being able to do what I want with my bank, when I want to, and importantly, how I want to, and that's where digital comes in. You see the other two major reasons there around ATM access and branch access. So access is really, really key from a bank's perspective, and certainly from a main bank driver's perspective. The access to that bank becomes really, really important. If you think about, again, how digital can start to change that dynamic, particularly if you're talking about challenger brands and challenger banks in some of these more established markets. One of the important things about main bank that we see is that overall, globally, only 40% of customers have ever actually switched their main bank. And in some of the Asian markets, that's even lower. So you look at Singapore, only 25% of customers, for instance, have switched their main bank ever. So getting that main bank relationship becomes really, really important because there's a large amount of lethargy in the banking community, and people will not really easily move away from their switching switch away from their main bank, I should say. So what is interesting to see there is the importance of getting that main bank relationship. What's also interesting to look at is understanding that if you can own the youth market, the 18 to 24 year old market, then more often than not, you will actually own the main bank share across the board. So getting that main bank share and getting it early becomes very, very important. And we'll see in a minute that you have a large amount of switching that happens up until about the age of 35. So getting in early and having a conversation with your customers at that 18 to 24 and engaging with them in the way that they want is very, very important. There's three markets, I should say, highlighted there where it's not the case. So in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and the UK, it's actually, there is another bank that owns that young market, that youth market, but then it switches to one of the more significantly larger players in each of those markets for the total bank. And in some of those markets, there's very different reasons why that's the case. And HSBC in Hong Kong is a great example. Once they get to that key switching moment, people will go to HSBC because they have a much broader range of products, they have a much broader footprint, they have a much broader access point in Hong Kong, and they dominate in that 25 to 34 year old life stage. So once people are given a choice and once people start to look around, that's when HSBC really starts to benefit in Hong Kong. But owning that main bank area is key, and I talked about switching a little bit, and you only ever switch, 40% of customers have only ever switched that main bank. If you look at how recent that switching is, and Grant, this is a fairly colourful slide, but if you focus on the reds and the yellows, that is switching that's happened in the last 2 to 3 years. So again, I draw your attention to the Asian markets. There is a large amount of switching that's gone on in the last even the 6 to 12 months. So within a year, there's a large amount of switching happening in these markets, and that's driven by a lot of different factors. If you look at places like Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand, there's a lot of regulatory changes, there's a lot of bank crises where there's a lot of mergers within banks, so regulatory changes pushing customers to have to change their main bank. In places like Singapore and Hong Kong and Australia to a lesser extent, you're seeing the effects of competition. So it's a very, very competitive market in Singapore at the moment where banks are looking to outdo one another with a punchy interest rate, and they're offering a very punchy interest rate, but they're rewarding you for performing main bank transactional behaviour on your account, so bundling packages and the OCBC 360 account and the DBS multiplier account. These are all based around rewarding customers for bringing products and using products with that main bank. And also importantly, it's rewarding customers for acting and engaging with them through a digital engagement scenario. So switching is very recent. I think we're going to continue to see switching in these markets, particularly in some of the emerging markets. As consumers start to get more choice and the banking markets become more developed and the propositions become more developed, but also, as we talked about earlier with Boonping, when you start to see digital engagement coming through so strongly, that's when you're going to start to see a lot of customer switching because they have a much greater choice and they'll be starting to choose their banks around. And when you look at those that said how likely are you to switch your main bank in 12 months, it's very, very low in terms of those that are actually looking to switch away. So owning that main bank relationship is very important. Owning it early and engaging with your youth segment is very important. And obviously that emerging affluent segment that a lot of banks like to talk about, and we've seen some banks start to target that segment very specifically with some propositions. Citibank Priority is a good example, and it's a very digital-led proposition. And it's very much about people in that growth stage of life. They're going in, they're getting a new job, they're getting married, they're starting to buy a car, they're buying a house, and importantly, they're making investments. So it's a really key segment of the market, and it's really where the competition is starting to centre on. It's the major battlefield, if you like, for retail banking at the minute, is that emerging affluent, and that's where the switching occurs in that market. So if we take a look at, from a switching perspective, you know, what it is about converting people to main bank, and a bit of a benchmarking metric here for you, and you can see some of the banks down the list there. Typically, if you can get around about 60% of customers as your main bank in terms of your overall penetration, I'll just explain main bank conversion to you quickly. So what we do is we look at, as I said, customers' entire banking relationships, and then we ask them which is their main bank. So if you have 100 customers, and let's take Singapore's case, so POSB, you've got 69 of those customers say that POSB is their main bank. So 69% considered that to be a main bank, and that gives you your conversion ratio. If you look at the markets around the world, typically if you can get around that 60% mark, 65% mark, then you're doing pretty good from a benchmarking perspective in terms of that main bank conversion. Now, obviously, that will depend on the market and the breadth and depth of the product offerings that you have. But typically, if you can work towards that sort of 60% conversion rate, and as I said, within each of these markets, we've got the breakdown of brands, and you can start to see where your brand particularly sits within that. What's really interesting, though, and one of the things that actually quite surprised me out of this this report globally, was the amount of products that they actually hold with their main bank on average is still only about 3. They tend to hold about 3 products with their main bank. That's excluding investments, so we're just talking about core banking products here, outside of investments, and we're talking about unique products as well. So if I have two credit cards with HSBC, that only counts as one product. If you look at that graph across the board there, it's around about 2.8 is the average. Again, some of the Asian markets is a little bit lower than that. You can see places like Brazil and France where it's slightly higher. Hong Kong actually does quite well from a consolidation perspective. But what's also important, if you look at that blue line, that light blue line, you can actually see that around about 40% or just over 40%, that is the total product holdings and the percentage that is held with your main bank. So across the board, and in Asia this is even more pronounced, banks really only get around about a third of the total customer wallet in terms of products held. And that becomes really, really important. If you look at the life stages, consumers generally, particularly in Asia, will still take out products up to about the age of 55, and they will still take out products with multiple banks up to the age of 55. So you're still only looking at getting around about 30% to 40% in terms of wallet share and product share. So there's a huge opportunity there for banks to engage with their customers, and we'll talk about cross-sell and upsell, and it's thinking about how to get in front of these customers and thinking about how they're actually banking now. And that's where digital plays such a strong part in this. Again, from a cross-sell perspective, in terms of banks, who's doing well and what's your kind of benchmark ratio? If you look down the list again, if you can work towards that 3.5 to 4 products with your customer, then that's a very, very good cross-sell ratio from a main bank customer perspective. There are some banks in France and Brazil where they typically only have one bank relationship anyway, so it's a lot easier, obviously, to consolidate that product holdings. But in Asia, where more often than not they will have two product relationships, or two bank relationships, I should say, sometimes even 3, you know, you're still looking at a 3.8 to 4.0 ratio in terms of that main bank cross-sell. So the opportunity to uplift with your main bank customers is key, and it's clear, but it's also, if you're a secondary bank or you're a challenger bank in some of these markets, then it's not all bad news, because they are going to still hold products with you, and they're going to be happy to hold products with different banks and also potentially non-bank affiliates. So the peer-to-peer lending space is obviously a really good example of places where customers now would prefer to engage digitally with a peer-to-peer lender, or they'll be using an Alipay or an Alibaba or a Weibo or whatever it might be to do all their payments, and that takes away some of that customer relationship from the bank. So banks are really trying to push this digital experience, and importantly, they're really trying to focus on life stage. If you look at the global average here, from a life stage perspective, there is a significant jump from 18 to 24 to 25 to 34 in terms of those products in terms of uptake, and then it kind of plateaus out. So that, again, that battle area between 18 and 34 is really where it's all going to be happening. That's where they're going to be taking out their additional products for the most part. As I said, in Asia, they continue to take out products up until about 55, and in a lot of the markets, that's quite a steep increase across those markets as well. So globally, people are holding about 7 products on average. In Asia, you know, that can be sometimes quite a little bit higher. But definitely there's that uptick there from 18 to 24 to 25 to 34. And if you look at what those products look like in terms of uptake, every single one of these product types here has an uptick around that 25 to 34. That is where it hits its peak in terms of the major uplift. You can see a couple here like credit card, and investment products, they will continue to go up, and customers will continue to take out these products right up until 55. And things like life insurance there also has a fairly gradual increase. But at every point, every product, at that 25 to 34 year old, there's an uptick. So customers are really taking out a lot more products in this age group, and how they're doing that is changing, and how and why they're doing that is changing as well. But if we look at when they're likely to switch, and again, to my point, that major battlefield is going to be in that 25 to 34 year old. So 16% of customers, the majority of customers, will switch their main bank, and remember, only 40% do. So 16% of customers will do that in that 25 to 34 year old age group. You've got almost 30% who will switch before the age of 34, and as we've seen, they're very unlikely to switch again after that. So again, engaging with that youth segment, engaging with the 25 to 34 year olds, engaging with that emerging affluent customer base is where you're going to start. Where you're going to start to get your switching, and that's where it's going to happen. And we'll look a little bit in a moment about the digital engagement and what that looks like. So when we talk about digital engagement, it was an interesting concept, I guess, when we started looking at it, because we thought, well, from a digital engagement perspective, we can look at how many times they access or what they access their banking products through. So do they do it online, through a desktop, through a laptop, through a mobile, through an app, what does that look like? But when you start to look at some of these more emerging markets, they actually skip form factors. A lot of them don't have access to laptops or desktop computers. So we also had to look at how often they were doing it through their mobile or their mobile app. So when we talk about highly digitally engaged customers, and we'll focus in on them quite a lot over the next couple of slides, but when we talk about those, it's those that are using their mobile or mobile apps for banking at least once a week. So they're on their phone, they're checking a balance, or they're interacting with their bank in some way through their mobile device. As a starting point, what you can see here is the level of digital engagement. And this is, again, just for banking. So we know in Asia and some of the other parts of the world, in Africa, customers are extremely digitally engaged from an overall perspective. They're on their smartphones a lot. In places like the Philippines, obviously, and in Africa and Kenya, and in Indonesia, they're happy to use their phones to trade airtime. They're happy to use their phones for remittance. But from a banking perspective, there's still a bit of work to do in terms of engaging highly digitally engaged customers for a banking relationship. However, that is certainly going to start to pick up. And when you add on just the digitally engaged, then those numbers are even more significant. So customers are digitally engaged, and we do see that, and we do expect that to grow. But what does that tend to mean? Now, when you look at customers across the globe, if you think about some of these banks that have the highest percentage of digitally engaged customers within their base, within their main bank relationships, a lot of these banks, and if you look at some of the markets around Asia, a lot of these banks are challenger brands. A lot of these banks have low product and branch distribution networks within their markets that they operate. So the customers that bank with them are looking to bank with them through digital anyway, so you would expect a much higher amount of digitally engaged customers. So some of the banks like HSBC, Standard Chartered, Citibank, in some of these more emerging markets where they're not the main player, are using digital and using digitally engaged customers, and they're using digital engagement to really get to their customer base, and that's how they're interacting with them. So it's interesting to see the sort of changes across the board there. From an age breakdown perspective, I don't think this is a surprise to anybody, but what you obviously see is those that are highly digitally engaged or digitally engaged are significantly younger than your digitally unengaged customers, an average age of around about 38%. But I think perhaps what's important to note is that you do still have 20%, 20-odd% of customers who are over the age of 55 or up to the age of 65 who are digitally engaged. So don't assume that it's just your younger customers that are digitally engaged. Don't assume that you can also just go and offer this to everybody, or you can't offer it to everyone, because your older customers are engaging with you digitally and they are keen to do that. And again, the more and more people who sort of start to use you from a digital perspective, we're going to show you in a second, there's some definite benefits to having that as an option. Digital engagement is obviously a big advantage from a distribution perspective, but it also has advantages from a customer experience perspective as well. So you can see here that the highly digitally engaged customers are far more likely from an NPS perspective to give you a high rating of recommendation. So they're much more likely to talk about you. They're much more likely to have an advocacy rating, a good advocacy rating with you. And if you think about how the highly digitally engaged people recommend, they do it through their smartphones. They like things on Facebook. They tag things on Instagram. They put things on Pinterest and Foursquare. So it's a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy that these people are out there engaged with you from a digital perspective. They're talking about you on digital mediums, and their friends and their colleagues who are also on digital engagement journey are going to see that, and they're going to start to consider you. Also, from a product perspective, those that are highly digitally engaged tend to hold more products with you. So you've got satisfied customers, you've got customers that have more products and they work with you for more products, but importantly, you also have the highly digitally engaged are those that are much more likely to switch as well. So there's a bit of a conundrum there in terms of you have to have these customers, you have to engage with them, but be careful and acknowledge that they are going to be having conversations and experiences outside of your bank. As we've seen, they're going to hold products outside of your bank, even if you're the main bank customer. So you need to have a digital proposition that works, and you need to have a digital proposition that's going to improve over time and keep up with the times. You can't just simply say, this is my digital proposition and I'm done. You need to have that constantly evolving, and you need to be engaging with your customers digitally. Because once they experience something better, that is when they're likely to consider switching. So just to wrap up, four sort of key steps to maximizing that main bank, particularly through digital. You know, be that first main bank. Only 40% of customers have ever switched their main bank in a lifetime. So being that first main bank, being involved in that key segment and battleground for switching is obviously very important. You have to acquire them through a strong transactional banking proposition, and you have to incentivize them in some way for further take up. You have to make that transactional account their hub. It needs to be everything that they do from an everyday banking transaction. The 18 to 34 segments, that is where we're going to see the biggest amounts of switching. That is where we see the uptake of all the products and all the core products like life insurance, insurance, wealth products. That is where that cross-sell can happen, and that is where you should be focusing from a retention perspective, but also from an acquisition perspective, particularly in Asia. We see the largest sort of uptick through those two strong age groups. And then finally, if you are going to engage through a strong digital proposition, make sure that it focuses on benefits to the customer. Make sure that it gives them an experience that they're going to enjoy, and also commit to it. So continue to develop that digital proposition and continue to work with your customers. And that is just about it. So I've got one quick slide which I'd like to just go through from a winning practice, because it's often nice to show you some banks that are actually doing this in the market. I suggest you all, if you don't know about Bank Mobile, spend some time looking at them. They're a bank in the UK, in the US, run by Jay Sidhu. He does a fantastic proposition, and they are specifically targeting that millennial banking through mobile banking propositions, and it's done extremely well, and the experience is absolutely fantastic. So from that, that perspective, I'll leave you with that, and I'm happy to take any questions if there are any.
Okay, thanks, Gerald. Certainly, there are questions. You presented a lot of information and you know, a lot of information about the main banks. And of course, right now we are going through this transition from traditional banks to the new digital banks, and all of this may change over time as well. Now it seems that the current drivers of main bank relationship is very transactional. You know, the chart that you showed, a lot of that reason for choosing the main bank or choosing a bank to be, it seems to be the amount of transaction that they do. It's about the distribution network. It's about the footprint of the bank itself. The question is, do customers change their main bank over their lifetime? And do they have a main bank for different product or different uses. For example, a main transaction bank. I remember when I was doing research in a bank, we were working out whether customers have a main bank that they kind of do their borrowing, a main bank for credit card, a main bank for investments. Does that relationship kind of change over time? And I guess from a bank perspective is, if it's a transactional relationship, does it mean that they bear more of the cost of that relationship? And how do they focus on the more profitable relationship?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It does change over time, Booping. When you think about the customer sort of life stage and life journey, life cycle, as a younger banking customer, you're typically only going to have one, maybe two products, and they're going to be fairly simple transactional products, as you say. As they start to move through that 25 to 34-year-old, that's when they start their new job, that's when they go and move out of home to buy a new home, it's when they get married, it's when they buy a car. All these life events are happening which causes them to need, and there's a customer need there from a product perspective. So what you often see is it shifts from a very transactional relationship and a savings-based relationship to a wealth-based relationship. And being able to be a bank that can partner with your customers in that wealth life journey is obviously very, very important. And as you say, it's about moving customers and cross-selling customers to the more profitable products. So you want to be able to get your home loan, you want to be able to get those credit card relationships, you want to get those wealth relationships tied up. And as we know, that's really when they all get taken out, is at that 18 to 24 and 25 to 34-year-olds. And what we're seeing is that the ways that customers are now engaging with banks, they don't tend to consider their main bank. It doesn't necessarily have to be their provider of all their products. They're happy to have relationships with other banks. They're happy to have relationships with non-banks. And if you look at the fintechs and that sort of thing, that's where that conversation is starting to go. So how do banks engage with those customers, make sure they're relevant, and make sure they're providing the products to them in the way that the customers want to have those products provided.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, from your research, what's the main difference between the cross-sell or product holding between the main banks and what you term as the more digitally engaged bank? Do you find that the banks that are doing, who the customers are more digitally engaged with, the product holdings are higher than their traditional kind of transactional main banks? And from a challenger bank perspective, is that the aim anymore, to be the main transaction bank or to be kind of a more niche focus bank?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think from a main bank and product relationship perspective, you would expect the main bank relationship to center around a large product, and traditionally that might have been the mortgage, or it might have been the insurance or the wealth piece. I think what you're seeing now is that customers are quite happy to have those relationships at different banks. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be doing that. From a digital perspective, one of the things that we do see that translates really well is obviously the investments and trading, particularly if you're looking at stocks and offering that functionality, because that is something they like to do on the bank, on the go, and have that information given to them real time. So that really starts to play, and that obviously is the kind of initial wealth product relationship that a lot of customers do have. It tends to be trading stocks on your local share market or whatever it might be. So they tend to be a little bit more digitally engaged. They're definitely more affluent. So from a customer perspective, they're quite attractive, and you'd expect them to start to move through and take up wider and more complex wealth products over time. Your question about the challenger brand is also a really interesting one, and I think, banks, I think, are now realizing that it's probably okay not to be the main bank in a lot of cases. It's going to be very hard to shift that core main bank relationship. So where are the opportunities for me to take some market share and take some product share from these larger incumbents? Where can I start to pick at the sides, if you like, and the low-hanging fruit? Where are the easy shifts from a product perspective, and how can I do that through digital engagement? I think that's definitely the model that a lot of banks are starting to look at from a sort of new market acquisition and a new market entry point, because it's a lot cheaper from a rollout perspective, obviously.
Okay, and now obviously some of this are happening in the more emerging markets. I think you mentioned in some of these markets where they are not burdened by legacy, and where you find oftentimes also a younger population that are more in tune with the digital technology. And that's where we talk about, you know, them adopting more kind of leapfrogging technology. How do you see consumers in those markets using their traditional main bank versus the digital bank? Do you see them using more product across different banks, and how do you offer a more digital focused product bundle, or what would that comprise from a traditional bank offering?
It's an interesting point, because you think about emerging markets, and as you rightly say, they have the ability to not be tied down by some of the legacy systems. I think one of the challenges they do face in a lot of these markets is that they're so cash heavy. So cash is still such an important part of the relationship, and important part of the everyday life. So a lot of times, you know, the banks that have the bricks and mortar and have the ability to have the branches and the tellers, there's a cultural aspect to that as well, where customers like to go into the branch and they like to have that relationship with their local branch manager, which you're going to find it hard to replace. But certainly, you know, from banks that are incumbent banks, there's a lot of good incumbent banks that are large, that are still going down that digital route and still attacking and trying new things from that digital perspective. Commonwealth Bank in Australia is a great example of a bank that used to be a large, stuffy, state-owned bank, wasn't very good at customer service, was terrible at digital innovation. They changed the game in the Australian market by having a sole focus on being the most digitally focused bank and the most well-respected in terms of customer service and customer experience. So they said, you know, we are going, even though we are a large incumbent bank and we do pick up a large amount of natural market share, we're going to go on a journey and we're going to make sure that our digital proposition is one of the best, if not the best, in the market. And if you look at what they're doing from a digital innovation perspective, they're one of the few large banks that are really changing the game in that sense. So they're a great bank to sort of look at from that perspective. So I think main banks do need to be on this journey. They do need to understand that customers are going to want to engage with them digitally. I think the challenger brands have to also accept that there's going to be a difficulty in getting people to switch, but the opportunity to have multiple products without being the main bank is also still there.
Okay, great. Thanks, Gerald, for those insights. I guess this is all the time we have for questions. So in conclusion, let me just summarize a few points from your presentation and so from Mubasha's presentation earlier. We are seeing how the new digital and mobile enabled consumer is changing and shifting the way that they interact with their banks, and you know, the traditional definition of main bank relationship, increasingly we are seeing digital engagement or transaction over digital platform becoming more prevalent and will become more important in that definition of the main bank relationship. And it's no longer just about helping customer interact with the banks by deploying the right channel mix, but increasingly it's also about engaging customers and in social media, in the other areas that consumers today interact with their world, and creating products around that. And of course, both Mubasha and Gerald share about some of the leading banks and how they are finding ways to be present where their customers today are interacting. Okay, on that note, I'd like to thank both Gerald and Mubasha for their presentation. And to all our callers, a recording of this top teleconsultation, as well as a soft copy of the research from IF Intelligence on the global cross-selling, will be available. We'll be providing a link to their website and through an email to everyone. And also do visit the website. If you'd like to listen to a playback of this session, recording will be available on our website. So we'd like to thank everyone for calling in this afternoon. Now our next event will be on the 30th of December, and where we'll be presenting a briefing on the banking industry outlook for 2016. Until then, we wish all of you a good day. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Boon-Ting.
Bye.
Thanks very much, Boon-Ting. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Yep, bye.